Hi, this is Janet Gowan with Love Letters Live, and I would say another wonderful guest, but she's an old guest, and actually the person...
A long-time guest.
A long-time guest who is responsible for Love Letters Live, and that is Teresa Ayers, my partner in Love Letters Live, who for the last year has been doing other things, and the truth is I miss her every time I do a Love Letters Live presentation, but she's here as a guest today. So, Teresa, I'm going to go to you, and... just ask you what you've been... Oh, well, before I ask you that, I want to say for all the people who are asking, how's Teresa and what is she doing and do I still see her? Yes, we are as loving and close friends as ever.
Yes.
And she's been doing a lot of things. So tell me what you've been doing.
Well, this is kind of odd to be on this side of the microphone, Janet, but thank you for inviting me. And yes, and I love you too. And
people are
always asking me, how's Janet?
Oh, good.
Do you still see her?
And I say,
oh, yes.
That's what they ask me, too. Like, I wouldn't see you. Of course. I don't.
Of course.
Yes.
So this has been about a year and a half since you've been on your own.
I know.
And I have to say to everyone and to you what a difficult decision it was for me to leave Love Letters Live.
I know it was.
It was very difficult. But it came at a time when some things were changing in my life. And
you want to say what those are?
Well, for one thing, I was getting some hand surgery and I was going to be unable to use my right hand for about 6 months.
Oh,
and
that
got in the way of doing a lot of things. And then I had also joined the Rotary Club of Fisherman's Wharf, and it had been announced that I would be the upcoming president.
Now, when it's just announced that you'll be upcoming, like, is it one of those things where you go to the ladies' room and you come back and you find that you're president, or how does that work?
Well, let's just say that it had been decided that I would be the next president.
With you?
No. It had been decided that I would be the next president, and... we're a small club. At that time, we were about 18 members, and now we're growing. We're about 26, 27 now, but at that time. And so someone needs to be president every year.
That's true.
A new president every year, and it's a club that's been around for about 20 years, and so all the longtime members had already been president.
I see.
It was my turn,
okay.
And apparently someone saw some potential in me that I would make a decent president. So
who wouldn't
see
the potential in you, darling?
And I was enjoying the club so much. I really felt that I couldn't say no. If I said no, I really needed to leave the club.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to do that
because that wouldn't have been fully responsible. And you?
Well, I just enjoy the club. I enjoy the people, and we have marvelous speakers every week. And Rotary, as I said, I was a new member. I hadn't been in it for years and years, but it's really a family feeling. When you join Rotary, a Rotary club, you become family with them. So you get to know the people. Rotary is about service, which I'm very committed
yes,
to. Service above self is the motto. And so there are many wonderful service projects that just warm my heart.
Okay, so why don't you say some of them that warm your heart the most?
Well, Rotary is a huge organization. It's an international organization, and
Do you want to say a website?
34,000 clubs.
Wow.
In more than 200 countries.
34,000 individual clubs.
Individual
so let's say
clubs.
Each one of those has 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what it has, but that's huge.
Yes, we have several million members, and these are people who really care about the world and people who are in need and the environment, women's health, clean water, surgery for cleft palate.
Yes. It's amazing to me with that many people, you say millions of members, there are any ills left in the world.
Well, for one, let me just talk about Rotary as long as we're starting on that.
Please.
For one thing, about 20 years ago, some club, and this is how it starts, any club can decide what they want to do, a service project anywhere in the world or in the local community.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a club somewhere, and I can't tell you where, that decided to try to get rid of polio in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started taking the oral vaccine to the remote islands and the remote places, and they began to see a difference in the incidence of polio. And they said, well... Then the Rotary International said, well, this is really working well. Why don't we stop with the Philippines? Why don't we get rid of polio forever on the planet?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been in the works for, I guess 1985 was when they started. And so money is
That's
collected.
Because Salk vaccine made more available to more people. And
well, it's just someone got the idea. Why, you know, we've pretty much eradicated it in the United States and in developed countries.
Right.
Let's get rid of it in the whole world.
Via the Salk vaccine.
Via the, via the, I think it's Sabin.
Oh, that's right.
The
that's
oral.
Right. You're right. Yes.
So Rotarians not only gather money, but they actually develop missions, little missions, and various clubs go around the world to even the remotest villages and put those drops in babies' mouths.
Mm.
And we're very close. It's like in the whole world we have like fewer than 20 cases
now,
of polio now.
I heard recently about something called Polio Plus that's coming back.
Well, that's Polio Plus is our Rotary's, or it's our effort. Polio Plus
see.
Program.
I thought there was a new strain coming back.
No. Polio Plus is the name of the Rotary's program.
Okay, I didn't know what that was.
A few years ago, maybe fewer than 5 years ago, Bill Gates got in the picture. He said, "I love what Rotary's doing, and I will match everything that you collect."
It's wonderful. So are there other diseases that you have your eye on?
Well, I've asked that question because in order for polio to be truly eradicated, there have to be no cases for like 3 to 5 years.
Yes.
And we haven't reached that yet.
Oh, so that the
bug is gone.
Yeah, so that the bug,
And so there's some remote places in Bangladesh, some in Africa, yet that have a few cases. And of course, there are different strains of polio, and we've solved the easy ones.
Oh, so there are.
And only the most virulent are left.
Oh,
and then you have to go back and vaccinate again and again for some of the children because they have diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vaccine just goes right through
them.
So it has to be a continual process for a while. But, you know, we're making efforts. And I want to say one thing. Rotary has such a name in the world that the Taliban has allowed Rotarians to go into Afghanistan and vaccinate the babies. And they let us go in, and they don't harm us.
That's amazing. So they know which side their bread is buttered on. In other words, if it's going to help them keep their babies alive, they'll do it.
Right. So that's the big thing. And I've asked...
Who's brave enough to do that, though? Going into those countries sometimes can be really perilous, as you see by reporters and photographers who are slain.
Rotarians that really believe in it and want to do it. It's just an organization of people that are really giving and wonderful. So that... And so what was I going to say? Oh, you asked about what next. Well, polio has to be eradicated first. And I've asked the question, well, then what are we going to do? And the answer is, well, we're not talking about that yet. We're going to get rid of polio first, and then we'll attack the next
thing. You mentioned right in the beginning, you said something about women's health. Or women's, does that extend to women's reproductive health?
Sure.
And what about that? Because there's so much going on right now that's so disturbing about people standing in the way of women determining their own physical and reproductive health.
Well, it can't be done politically. It has to be done grassroots. Mm-hmm. And so there are clubs that go in and educate women, go into villages and developing countries and educate them.
Because, in what, birth control?
Talking to them about family planning, birth control, safe births. There's still some really hideous things that go on, and so you just educate women. And education,
and they're open to it.
They may or may not be, but you have to work,
You
know, you have to work carefully.
So you're not necessarily past the offering stage. I mean, when you go in, it's to offer.
Yes.
You don't know what you'll be met with, really.
Yes, and has to be done carefully. And, of course, educating women is just one of the best things in the world that you can do, because when women learn things... they make changes.
Well,
they're the ones that want to change, and they're the ones that are usually at the bottom of the totem pole, and so they look forward to change.
Do they? Okay, so I didn't know.
Men like things the way they are. Now that's an overstatement, but in general,
I don't mind overstatement. But I have another question though, because you know I blocked his name already because it's so disturbing. But what's his name? Who came out with that pronouncement? The politician. Oh. I'm sorry. Tell me his name.
Oh, I forget.
Yes, the man.
I'm trying to forget.
I know that.
Women were legitimately raped.
Yeah. Oh, that's a nice phrase. I've been legitimately raped. Okay.
Can't conceive.
Right, because their bodies just shut down.
Yeah, the body has a way of.
So my question is,
which is totally baloney.
It's so disturbing that a man like that can legally open his mouth. Is so disturbing to me.
Freedom of speech, you know.
Well, we already freedom of speech. Yes, critical. But it already has limits. We can't say fire in a crowded theater. Mm-hmm. And we cannot say bomb in an airport without running the risk of getting carted away. I don't see what would be so awful that you can't just make up physiology and spread it as the gospel. But that's just me. But what about educating men?
That's important too. And that actually happens. That can happen, but through women usually. Because when women change, then men have to.
Well, yes, but men still rape and men still abandon and men still do some pretty awful things. So, but you're saying you can't just go to the men themselves.
It's very difficult, and I'm not an authority on this, but I've done a bit of reading on it. But you can't legislate those things very well. It doesn't work. What works is to educate, is to change women.
Yes. Well, Lysistrata was a great story. Mm-hmm. You remember that? Mm-hmm. That was the women who just refused to have anything to do with their husbands sexually until the war ended. Mm-hmm. As long as they were making war, there was no sex. Mm-hmm. And that war ended. So women do have the power if they have the bravery to follow it through.
Yes.
Oh, well.
So that's what
I wish the world well in this.
Not just Rotary, but a lot of organizations are actually working with women to increase their leadership skills, to give them confidence.
I think Planned Parenthood is doing that, right?
Right.
Yes.
Right. So I hate the word empowering, but that's what we try to do.
Yes, right. Okay. So what other things are you doing in life?
Well, Rotary is just one. Actually, I've
not that that's not full time. I understand that.
Well, for the year I've stopped going out and actively looking for business for myself, for paying business, and I'm giving myself the luxury this year of just working on a number of things. Rotary takes a great, as president, it takes a lot of my time, which I consider to be worthwhile. I also work with the Sage Scholars at Cal Berkeley.
You're still doing that? Wonderful.
I'm on the board, and I actively support.
Why don't you tell us what this is?
Sage Scholars is a small program at Cal Berkeley for low-income, high-performing students that get into Cal on their own initiative and their own intelligence. But they typically are the first in their family to go to university. They come from, some of them, extreme poverty. Mm-hmm. Some of them, very difficult family situations. They have very little family support because the family doesn't know how to navigate the ropes of a university, let alone
Cal
Berkeley.
Getting harder and harder, by the way.
Yes, and it's getting more difficult.
Right.
So they have, they're on scholarships, they're on Pell Grants, and without a program to help them and support them in their times of personal and financial difficulty, mm-hmm. many of them are in danger of dropping out.
Ah.
And so this program, and the executive director, Marjorie Weingrow, who is the program, she does everything. She has to go out and fund the program, and she develops the programs. She works with the kids when they have personal problems and troubles.
You know,
she's their mother hen. She's everything.
It's wonderful. I mean, when you talk about running the, just didn't occur to me, the motivation and hard work must take just to get in alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That kind of motivation would be reason enough. I mean, as opposed to, not to take away anything from anybody, but so many people,
mm-hmm.
It was automatic.
Right.
You go to high school from junior high school, and you go to college from high school. There's no thought about it. It's just the next natural step.
Right.
We didn't have to work hard at it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that's really something. And to have to get past just all the hurdles of today's life.
Well, and these young people, many of them have other challenges. They may have never been in a professional office.
Uh-huh.
They may never have had the opportunity to shake hands with a professional, with an
mm-hmm.
executive.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know. Some of them come from families where they ate beans and rice, and they don't know how to order from a menu. I mean,
mm-hmm.
some of them have...
So you're talking about kids who are just culturally different from the...
Right.
What you find at a university. Having talked to some of these people, what do you think is their motivation?
Well, they're very smart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just always
in awe
of their intelligence.
Yeah, smart
so they're
lives
very,
anywhere.
They're very smart. And typically how they happen to think about going to university mm-hmm. is that they have been fortunate to have a teacher or a high school career counselor who has seen the potential in them.
And given a little push.
And encouraged them.
Nice. Okay.
In some families, the families recognize that their children need to go to university, but they don't know how to, mm-hmm. you know, they don't know how to help them other than to encourage them to go.
Yes.
And then some of them have families who actively work to prevent them from being in school. You know, they have such troubles that they're always trying to pull the young person away. Oh,
why?
You know, my brother's going to be in court today. You need to be there. You need to be, we're poor. We need food. You need to be working instead of going to school and supporting us, you know, giving us money for rent and food.
So what do you think is behind that?
Behind?
Stopping your children from progressing in the way that they'd like to.
Well,
I understand that if the family needs money for food, then another hand at work would be helpful. But
these are
going to court.
Yeah, these are people that don't understand the importance of an education.
Oh, I see. Okay,
and it hasn't been their culture,
mm-hmm.
and so they're living day to day. And
okay. So it's kind of like a foreign threat almost.
Yes.
I could understand that now
yes.
that you say it.
Yes.
Right.
So anyway, there's all kinds of other situations. So. I'm a board member, and I'm also help Marjorie because she's pretty much a one person
mm-hmm.
operation, and I get great joy in helping her help these young people.
Yes.
And the transition is truly amazing from when they come in and I see them when they come in and they have trouble looking you in the eye or making any kind of conversation,
mm-hmm.
what to say. And by the time they graduate, and by the way, they all graduate
mm-hmm.
and from the Sage Scholars Program, this has been going on about 12 years. Everyone has graduated and gone into a job that they love,
or
they've been accepted into a grad school. So she has a tremendous record.
So it sounds kind of like that's sometimes a matter of a person's getting to the stage where he or she feels entitled to be there, that looking you in the eye.
Well, confidence.
Yes.
Yes, confidence. And how to dress, how to mm-hmm. pick up a fork, the right fork, and so the transition is one. So that is something that is very meaningful to me. So those are a couple of things that I do.
Sounds wonderful. Well, I can see why you're busy full time. And you have a house guest right now from Turkey.
Right.
You lived in Turkey for what?
Well, I worked in Turkey for about 5 years, between mm-hmm. 95 and 2000, and got to know the people very well.
Anything particular about the Turkish people that you could say?
Absolutely. As I said,
as a consultant?
Yes, I was consulting with a bank here in the United States, and we went there and consulted with a bank there. I was in and out of the country a lot for 5 years, and I love the country. I never got tired of going there, no matter how many times. In 1 year, I was there about a third of the year.
Oh, you went back and forth.
I went back and forth.
Oh, I thought you were there full time. Uh-huh.
No, I would be there for 2 or 3 weeks, and then I would be back in the States for a couple of weeks,
uh-huh.
and then back and forth. So, lots of air time. But I never got tired. I always looked forward to going back. I love the people. I love the country. It's so beautiful.
I felt the same way. I was there twice,
mm-hmm.
and the first time I saw it off a boat, I thought I'm home, and I don't know what it was. And the people are so smart and so adorable.
And welcoming. It's part of their culture.
Welcoming.
This is something
uh-huh.
that is not understood. It's an Islamic country, and, you know, there are people that think that Muslims are dangerous and
yeah,
terrorists and all of that. That is absolutely not the culture. They are the most welcoming people I've ever known.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I felt that also. And also, as I say, smart and sophisticated mm-hmm. and worldly. And I was really curious. I don't know how this works, and maybe you do, and maybe it's a really dumb question. But I know when we come back that I think we didn't have to declare certain things because we were coming from a third world country.
Not anymore.
Now, well, maybe not anymore, but these people are so smart and they were so first world while we were still living in caves, I believe. You know, it goes back so far, their sophistication.
Mm-hmm.
What defines that? And what do you say, not anymore?
Well, Turkey is an upcoming country now. It's not a developing country anymore.
Well, why was it called developing when it was so far ahead of us?
Well, in what way was it far ahead of us? It, you know, it was part of the Ottoman Empire for many years.
Because they lived beautifully in a worldly, sophisticated way.
Well, there's different sides of the country. You were probably in Istanbul. where, yes, that is a world-class, very sophisticated, secular city. If you go to the other side of the Bosphorus, mm-hmm. where it's the Asian side, you find very rural.
So rural and poverty is what defines it?
Rural, mm-hmm. Poor people, hardworking, very hardworking people. It's known for that. But farmers, factory workers.
Gosh, there's something about the very phrase third world country that is silly. I mean, it has kind of a denigrating quality. I don't want
Right, but you think in terms of like Bangladesh or something as a third world country. Turkey is not.
No.
And it is very productive. And manufacturing, banking, whatever. Mm-hmm. So,
yes.
So I love Turkey.
Me too. Well, let me ask you something, because we are about love letters,
mm-hmm.
and I just have to do this every time. And I do it, by the way, and, you know, even when I'm with people, the stories about love letters that people tell me, the power of them is astounding. And actually, for those of you who want to know this, this whole Love Letters Live talk show and our workshops, movement, yes, was largely due to Teresa's insight. I had done a presentation on writing obituaries and eulogies ahead of time, not for the God forbids, but for your friends and people who by nature's best plan are going to pass away before we do, to write those obituaries and eulogies and send them ahead as love letters. I did this for a friend of mine who insisted on it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do it. And I thought, she wanted me to write her obituary, and I just didn't want to do it because I didn't want to take part in anything that looked to a time where she's not on this earth with me. And she was so insistent. And it occurred to me, why not just write it and send it to her as a love letter? Why should she have to wait till she's 6 feet under for people to know, for her to know in what high regard people held her? Anyway, so I did it. And it was an amazing result. So I was talking about this. And it was Teresa who came to me and said, I think we can do something. That was wonderful.
Yes. So out of that came workshops and the radio show and With Hope We're...
And our friendship.
And our friendship. Yes.
But so if you... And I know you write letters and you come from letter writers.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I do come from a long line of letter writers.
Is that because we're old?
I think it's because we're old, and that was the form of communication.
Yes.
And
we were in between smoke signals and the telephone.
My grandparents moved, both sets of grandparents moved far away from their families, one from North Carolina and another from Indiana, and that was in the 1800s, and there was no telephone, was no internet.
Right.
So,
and the only thing, I'm always touched by this because I read an article that led me to know this. Pretty much the only thing that people could guarantee their families when they left in 1800 or 1910, pretty much the only thing that these young people who were leaving could guarantee their parents was, you will never see me again.
Or not very often.
Right. But the never was always in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it took money and time, mm-hmm. and people didn't have,
Right. Well, my grandmother, for example, moved west with my grandfather when she was 16.
From where?
From North Carolina. And I think she saw her mother only two more times. They did take train trips back, but not very often. So the letter was...
But that's not across an ocean even.
No.
Yes.
But it's a 5-day trip by train.
Right.
So I have a lot of letters. When I went to college, I wrote letters to my parents,
and
they wrote letters to me.
Yes.
And there was the telephone, but that was long distance, and it was expensive, and it wasn't the culture of my family to call.
And you had to
call,
you had to scream, "Can you hear me?"
Yeah.
Just like today. I know, it always makes me laugh.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, golly.
But those letters, and I still have many of them, and I wrote to my grandmother and so forth. But they weren't about love. They were about what was cooked for dinner last night, what the weather was like, what our plans were for the weekend, and so forth. And so when I heard about your love letter, and I thought, we're missing an opportunity here.
Yes.
If we're writing a letter, let's put some real love into it and let people know how we feel about
them. Good point. So difference between the what I'm doing letter and a real love letter, which is about the other guy.
Right.
On the other hand, there is something to, I mean, you can combine them.
Yes.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, you should be love in every letter, don't you?
Right. Well, I think today, just writing a letter to somebody, which people don't do very often unless it's to express love. You don't have to do that for what I'm doing this week. Mm-hmm. Although I want to say, that with the post offices closing at the rate they are,
it's going to be more difficult.
Yes. So now is really a good time to just keep those cards and letters coming. I mean, do a lot of them because they're going to be found in generations to come. And we're coming to a time when, sadly enough, the opportunity may eventually disappear to send the world's perfect gift for 44 cents.
Right.
I guess there'll always be some way of sending a written package, and we'll always be promoting that.
And love letters can come in email. For example, many of the colleagues that I work with, I don't know their home address, and I have no way of knowing because we don't put it on the website.
Right.
We don't put it on our business card.
Right.
And I just, about 2 months ago, I did receive the loveliest email love letter that one of the best I've ever received. Janet actually sends the very best love letters, but this was really a true love letter, and I printed it out.
Oh, good.
And put it up on my wall for a while because it was so dear.
I'm glad you're saying this because I'm going to have to get a little flexible at some point before I die and and say, which I'm really coming to anyway, that although I don't consider an email a true love letter in that sense of getting some present delivered to your door that you don't have to download and put the paper. But if you do, and I actually got one from somebody too, a woman I knew was a girl in high school. I didn't think she really even knew who I was, and I got an email from her several years ago about how I changed the course of her life. It was just astounding. We're now friends as adults. She lives in New York, and it was just astounding. But the point is, yes, do print it out, and do it on nice paper. What the heck? Give yourself a present. But print it out and make yourself even a couple of copies, because someday, as you, Teresa, pointed out to me, which just gave me chills, technology changes. And eventually you will not be able to access that email.
Right. Your hard drive can crash.
Oh, that too. That too. But things change. I mean, you can't play your Betamax movies. And okay, you're laughing, but you know, that seemed forever. And floppy disks?
No. Gone.
How much information did you put on that thinking you'd have it forever?
Well, they don't even, you can't even use them anymore.
That's the point.
Yeah.
You know, so, okay. So do it now. Just send letters to people you care about and just recall memories and express appreciation. And as Teresa always says, say what you feel.
While you still have the chance.
Yes, yes. And although you can write to people who are no longer with us on this earth, absolutely you can. You can't write when you're gone.
That's right.
And, well, I don't know that you can't, but I'm guessing you can't. And so do it while you're still here and let it become part of the world's love legacy. Thank you, darling, for doing this.
Oh, are we
with
over?
Me.
Is it done?
Yes,
this is such fun.
I know. We can do another one.
Okay.
Let's do another one. Let's talk about some political things next time and write an open letter to our leaders.
That's a good idea.
I'd love to do that.
Yes.
Okay, so until we do that, this is Janet Gallen
and Teresa Ayers
saying goodbye till next time.
Bye.